Lion's Way presents the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show. Welcome to the inaugural episode of our podcast about content marketing, content creation, and freelance writing. In this episode, we will discuss the epic battle between two legendary foes, marketing and sales. There are three of us on this podcast. We are a tri-hosted podcast. I am Eric, and I am here to keep the other two hosts from strangling each other. And so I will introduce them now. First, Carl, what is your favorite thing to write?
My favorite thing to write is haiku, because it only takes me about 45 seconds, and I can usually infuse 3 to 4 swear words into each haiku. 5, 7, 5, boys and girls.
Yeah, especially since each swear word is pretty much just one syllable. You can
the good ones are one syllable, yeah. But then there's one really good one that's longer.
There is, yeah. That's like almost a whole line. Yeah. All right, our other co-host, tri-host, is Joel. Joel, what is the first thing that you remember writing?
I remember spending a great deal of time in my single digits writing a poem called The Untidy Brain, which I'm sure that my parents still have somewhere.
Really?
I also untidy am pretty sure. It's a particular
untidy
word.
Untidy is a really big word for a kid. Where'd you find it?
That's a good question. And why I chose not to call it a messy brain is well beyond my own understanding of myself. But I don't understand myself very well at all.
That's okay. Nobody ever does. And that's why podcasts exist. So when I said this is a podcast about writing, the three of us are professional writers. We write for money. We decided to do this instead of being mercenaries because none of us enjoy the whole getting shot at thing. And it turns out that the pen is mightier than the sword. And so we are professional writers. We're going to talk about what marketing and sales are and why they are different. And since I am the one who understands this area the least, I'm going to turn to my older, wiser co-hosts to inform us. So, Carl, I'm going to start with you. As somebody who has probably been in movies about salespeople and stuff, like, I don't know, were you with that ABC guy?
Yeah, that's me. I was in that. It was great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Can you tell us what sales is?
Yeah. In B2B terms, you know, sales is sort of the direct link between the company and the prospect slash eventual client or customer. The salespeople are the ones on the front line who are responsible for getting the ink on the paper and getting new contracts and driving revenue so that all the folks that are doing the developing and the infrastructure can have something to do and install and deploy. And we work with marketing in the sense that marketing kind of does the more, they cast a wide net and then they try to bring stuff down to the sales team that in the form of qualified leads that can then be chased down and knocked into the sales funnel and worked through that process to close.
All right. Thank you. That was good. I feel like you have already brought up a number of issues that we're going to need to discuss. First of all, why sales seems to use so much military jargon? Like the front line, like, holy crap, what are you doing?
It is like
up
the front
there?
Line. You don't actually die in sales, though some have. They go to the restroom and just never come back. And that happens sometimes. But in sales, if you don't, you know, succeed, you get fired, just like in that ABC movie you were talking about, where second place is a steak knife and third place is you get the steak knife in the back on the way out the door. Yeah, that's why we use so many military terms, because you could be carrying your crap out in a box at any time.
Well, thank you, Corporal. That was very helpful. Now, Joel, why don't you tell us what marketing is? Now, Carl mentioned marketing a little bit, and he said something. He sort of alluded that marketing is like the fisherman to sales' soldiers. How do you feel about this metaphor?
Sure. You can picture the water as being a glassy surface that you can't see through, and you need to push through that in order to find a damn fish. So yes, the metaphor sort of works, but I would move a little bit past it to say that marketing is creating awareness and action in an audience. That audience is prospective clients, but they don't yet have relationship with the or enough of a relationship with a business to be exchanging cash with them. That outreach is in whatever way we can come up with. So be it nets or fishing lines or spear guns, whatever we can come up with, whatever technology we have available to raise awareness and to drive action in an audience. It's focused on not just the products, but also the brand awareness. So how people feel about the company, et cetera. I would say that instead of the, I was listening to Carl talk about the war metaphors and you query him about it. And it occurs to me that marketing's esprit de corps is much more about hugging and calling each other rock stars. There is not nearly that sense that somebody's going to get stabbed in the back. People are just going to get like gold stars for showing up and wearing matching shoes.
Would you say then that if we're going to really stretch this metaphor out, when a marketing person loses their relevance, instead of like going to the bathroom and mysteriously vanishing, do they just continue getting older and sitting in a cubicle and gathering dust? Like, is there a saying that says old marketers never die? They just smell that way.
They're definitely moved on when they're not effective, but the language around it is like, he was such a rock star, but we had to give him the opportunity to move on to new pastures or some such positive thing, as opposed to we sent him out into the cold to fend for himself until the bears came.
All right. So in terms of like how a company thrives and survives, so both marketing and sales are vital to that. I want to know, Carl, you mentioned something about a funnel. Can you tell us what that is? What is this funnel?
Yeah, the sales, anybody who's been in sales, you know, understands what the sales funnel is. And I think a lot of marketing people obviously know what it is too, because they hear the sales team talking about it. You know, at the top of the funnel, you are tossing into the top of it, you know, leads, maybe qualified, semi-qualified, unqualified, and you are working to get them to close. Now, the less qualified leads, you will be spending more time in your initial conversations with them, you know, determining things like, do they have budget? Do they have a need? Do they have the proper, you know, compatible technologies to integrate with whatever you're selling? You know, do they have anything, you know, are there any obstacles prohibiting them from purchasing your offering, such as they're under contract with another provider for a period of time that will extend, you know, beyond your normal 90 to 60 day sales or 6 month sales cycle. And, you know, then sometimes qualified leads come in, and a lot of that's already happened. And so you're moving from qualification, like I was talking about there, to exploration of budget, to proposal, to bringing in a sales engineer, for example, to talk about any potential hiccups in technology compatibility or resource gaps within the company. Perhaps, you know, you're deploying some type of application that there does not exist enough expertise inside the company to properly maintain it. So that could be a whole nother opportunity for you as a salesperson to bring in your service offering to help them with that. But it's just one big exploratory journey to get someone to, here is a proposal of specific services for an amount that works with your budget. Can we get you to sign? And then from there, you make good on all the things you promised during that sales funnel experience.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's also sort of like underlines a fairly major thing about the type of sales and marketing that we're talking about. Like, this is business to business material, which means that the marketing isn't going to be like making, you know, commercials selling toys to kids. This is sort of like marketing needs to find any sort of lead for sales that is like somebody who can sign, you know, contracts worth, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, these are big major products and not, you know, boxes of Legos or whatever. It might be like,
correct.
Maybe it might be like a whole shipping container full of Legos, perhaps, but not just one box.
And not only that, the product needs to have a return on investment. It doesn't just make you feel good. I mean, a shipping container full of Legos dropped in front of my house would give me a glowy feeling inside. But trying to explain the ROI of that to, you know, somebody else on your checking account would be hard.
Well, that's a super interesting point. Can you talk about how does marketing, you know, snag a lead? How does that fishing net, does marketing also have a funnel? I guess that's a question I have.
We do. It is not as clear because we're dealing with a one-to-many relationship as opposed to the one-to-one relationship of sales. But there's always, just about any marketing organization creates either a funnel, a pipeline, or a journey. And they're dotted lines between places that a prospect is going through. Generally, the first one is awareness. They never heard about us before, and now they know that we exist. But it could also be that they have a problem, you know. And then we move them into a place where we call them a qualified lead. And those motions are usually through metrics that we're keeping about their digital behavior. So they went to the website, they filled out a form, they responded to an email, et cetera. And we're using those to infer that they've moved to another level in the pipeline funnel journey.
Okay. And then out of the bottom of that journey, is there sort of a winnowing process where does marketing sort of handle part of that winnowing where you end up getting fewer and fewer people who make it all the way to the end of the pipeline? So at the end of the pipeline, does that count as a qualified lead for sales?
Ideally, and yet no. The marketing qualified lead has gone in the last 5 or maybe 10 years from a great idea to a very denigrated concept because sales has generally, and I'm speaking on a very broad level, just rejected the quality of the marketing qualified lead, also known as the MQL. And from our point of view, that has to do with that sales is incentivized by numbers, not quality. So they're not really set up to winnow because the smaller the numbers that they deliver, the less positive they look. It's hard for them to show quality, but they can show quantity. And as a result, they tend to not winnow very much.
Interesting. So then is there basically just a one-way line of feeding between marketing and sales? Does marketing just send tons of potential unqualified leads to sales and then sales is responsible for the winnowing? Is there anything that happens in the other direction?
Yeah, at a high level, it is a one-directional thing. I think we're being, I want to avoid being too broad in our generalizations about what marketing delivers to the sales team, because there are very often quite successful marketing operations that do a really great job of getting, the right kind of MQLs in front of their sales team, because they are, they have good, you talk about two-way, does it go two ways? And I would offer that when there is good two-way communication between sales and marketing, you really see an uptick in how well received the MQLs are by the sales team, because, marketing has personas that they target and they make assumptions about those personas. And if there's not good two-way communication between sales and marketing, they can't tweak those personas based on what is happening on the real, on the front lines. And so when you do get that, it is, in my personal experience, it is rare when there is two-way communication. And it has gotten rarer in recent years because of how we have become geographically dispersed in terms of how we work. Before, everybody was in the same cube farm by and large, and they would see each other every day. And so that would made two-way communication more of a natural part of the work process. Now you have to do a little bit more. You have to want it. You have to really get out there and take the initiative to, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Marketing Gang. That was a really horrible way to put that, so edit that out. But, hey, marketing team, this was a really fantastic set of MQLs that our team got last month. And please make more like this. And here's what made them great, or vice versa, if it'd be negative feedback. But often there is not that two-way communication. It just flows down to sales. Sales does what they can with it, and they grumble to themselves about what didn't work. And again, that's a very anecdotal assessment based on my personal history, not anything studied by McKinsey. So
they may have studied it, but they haven't shared it yet.
Yes, correct. Maybe they never exactly. will. Yes, my point.
If we cared about McKinsey, we would have invited him onto this podcast.
Him. I want to follow that. Yes, Carl, I think you're jumping into where we need to be, which is that these can be iterative, and that these projects, the sales project and the marketing project, should not be standalone, and they should definitely be informing each other. Marketing definitely should be informed by sales. And arguably there's information in marketing that can help sales as well, besides just the qualified leads. For instance, sales clients are now, in a digital world, and they are referring to marketing content constantly in the process of sales. And Carl alluded to the fact that all of these B2B sales have multiple people who need to buy in. They have a buying committee, and those people have different roles and responsibilities. For instance, the IT person is just going to want to know about security. And so they're going to go to the website and see if there's anything about security there. And that's going to be marketing's responsibility to have that passively available to the right person for the sales team. And again, if they don't know that that's needed, they're going to be tripping up the opportunities that sales has.
So it seems to me like we sort of mentioned a couple times, different personas. And Joel, you had brought this up. I think both of you brought it up. But it seems to me like in terms of how the two teams would work together, sales has the information about the people who they finally sell to. Right. So sales knows we are managing to sell to this sort of company, or this sort of representative at the company is making these decisions. So it seems to me like the personas that marketing is trying to hit should probably be informed by the successes and failures that sales has experienced. Does that sort of two-way communication happen, or should it?
That's a really great question, because a lot of times what marketing is directed to do comes in a top-down manner, especially in the tech world. It comes down to, this is how we have envisioned our offering, and this is who we envision selling it to. And so that particular type of communication, in my experience, has been very top-down, and there's not a lot of... There might be some pushback from the ground, but it might not be what they want to hear at the strategic level. We want to sell this enterprise level solution, and we're directing marketing to make all these broad enterprise level plays in the marketing content. And then sales is like, well, no, we've got this really great opportunity to sell at the departmental level to this particular job title. And they send that back up the food chain, and they're like, well, that's not what we want you to do, because that's not where we have a strategic goal to get to. And so whether that moves the conversation along or not, I don't know, but that is what I've seen as a typical communication flow.
So what you're saying is, it doesn't seem like that sort of communication doesn't happen, like the bottom up sort of communication that reflects the successes that sales has had isn't necessarily what's informing marketing at the moment.
I don't think it does as much as it should. And by that, I mean in a positive way. And that is, making sure that, some of the tools we use are kept up to date, things like Salesforce and Marketo, making sure that everyone has access to the information that is being discovered on the ground during the sales meetings and sales calls. And I think if that, that is a crucial thing, rather than a squeaky wheel in the sales department saying, I need a piece of content from the marketing department that does X. And then that, then they try to push that up the food chain. And that sometimes, runs into conflict with some strategic stuff.
Okay. So Joel, I have a question about how marketing might be evolving in the modern world, and how that might be affecting the way that it's delivering information to sales. Today, we have so much tracking data and so much information on people who like visit websites and people who download PDFs, people who view content, people who watch videos and stuff. And you can see even on websites where you'll go to some business and you'll want to read about their product and they'll be like, you know, give us your precious, precious contact information before we let you look at our delicious PDFs. And so you have to do that, right? So marketing usually has control of the websites and website data and all that kind of stuff. So they have lots of tracking information and lots of information about what people are doing compared to, you know, how things were 20 years ago when we were all way too young to have jobs and stuff, right?
We're still too young to have jobs.
So I guess the question is, do you think that that level of tracking and that level of comprehension of what the audience might be or the consumers of content might be, has that affected the quality of leads that marketing is able to, you know, harvest from the sea of?
It should. And I don't have like survey data as to how many marketing organizations or which marketing organizations are doing this better. But mm-hmm. I will say that the generation before of technology was manual intuition was utilized in order to figure out what an action meant. Uh-huh. So a downloading a white paper is a certain type of intent. Downloading a product sheet is a more focused type of intent, say, right? Now there are compute tools that will do that be better than that intuition by looking at past behaviors and actually saying people download data sheets, you know, to use as the wallpapers on their phones or something, and that doesn't mean anything. They are actually able to use, you know, like machine learning and a variety of other things in order to cull down and answer those questions with historic data as opposed to human intuition. But once again, I don't really mm-hmm. know how many people are functionally doing that in an effective way at this point. It'd be interesting to know, but I don't have that answer.
It would be interesting to know. I know that I certainly receive a good number of emails from salespeople at websites where I've entered my information to download a paper. And I have to send a lot of emails saying like, sorry, I'm not buying your product. I just wanted to learn.
Yeah, that's an indicator that people are still, what you're kind of seeing there is like your first interaction with the brand, you fill out a form and you get a phone call. That means that they're scoring the first thing you do as an MQL one, you know, one uh-huh. out of one, or 100% out of 100%, whatever their scale is. And they're immediately burning salespeople's time communicating with you. And once again, that's like, well, they are returning lots of MQLs, aren't they?
But
they're not really measuring intent particularly. Once again, just like you, I'm like, well, my own personal non-scientific survey is not a lot of people are calling those lists.
So a little while ago when I asked you about like, is there such thing as a marketing funnel, you talked about a number of different things like a pipeline, a journey, I think there was a third category. The first category you said is the first one that I forgot. But I know that you did talk about sort of a pipeline. Now, one of the things that we sort of focus on when it comes to business-to-business marketing is writing stuff. So we write, we deliver like digital assets, I guess, whether that's websites, web pages, or PDFs, or email templates, or whatever. How do these play together to create a pipeline? Like, what would a pipeline look like then?
I will tell you that for me, a pipeline is a tool for conversation, and mm-hmm. the amount of actual customers that traveled through the pipeline journey or funnel in the way that we map it out is probably a pretty low percentage, frankly, because people do their own thing.
Uh-huh.
They hop back and forth. They download assets in different orders, God forbid, you know. But once again, you create that journey, pipeline or asset, and then you instill an asset or a action on that.
A call to action. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And then that call to action will lead you to the next one. So that kind of awareness document, which would be like problems with security in baseball stadiums. You download that. You're like, okay, you're somebody who is interested in security in baseball stadiums. And then the next one would be like approaches to solving that problem. Okay, you're somebody who actually has a decision-making responsibility to solve that problem. And then the third would be like our product sheet and how we solve that problem. And then you're like, okay, they're actually evaluating us as a potential project or potential solution for that. And you know, that's the ideal. But once again, like if you think about your own buyer's journeys, they're rarely so linear.
Well, what I'm sort of curious about now is it seems like, you know, we're talking about catching some pretty big fish. Mm-hmm. And the pipeline that you were discussing, like a lot of that can be kind of automated, but it also seems like some of that should have maybe before the days of automation been in the realms of salespeople. Like maybe the MQL after a single email might have been effective a while ago.
It depends a bit on what it is you're selling, but I would offer that in the time that technology has over, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument, the last 20 years, we've seen exponential growth in the capabilities of B2B tech, whether that is, you know, I'll go back and mention again, Salesforce, Marketo. Salesforce today versus what it was in 1999 it's quite different. So there is an integration between sales and marketing that maybe perhaps didn't exist as much except for smaller companies earlier on. Now, again, I'm sure there's somebody who could come and argue with me about that, but that's we're going to go and go with that premise for this particular discussion. And I would just offer that, you know, when Joel's talking about the buyer's journey or the pipeline or whatever we want to call it, you know, marketing begins their efforts with pain points that they are known pain points. And those are often identified with the help of people in the sales department and people who are at the founder level, you know, at the C-suite level. Like we have identified these five pain points in this particular vertical, and we are going to create marketing content that indicates that we are aware of these pain points. We empathize with the individuals who are on the front line dealing with them. And then we begin, you know, talking about our solution for those, you know, to ease those pain points. And that's the journey that leads to the sales funnel. You know, whether they go in the order that the marketing team, intends for that prospect to go on, it doesn't really matter because they're exploring the offering. And that's what you're trying to engage people at the marketing level to do. You want them to explore the offering, learn as much about it as possible before they get transitioned into the sales funnel. So you're trying to avoid the very thing that you opened this segment of the discussion with, which is, I just wanted to read your ebook. I didn't want to call from the sales team, you know? And so the better the technology is for the marketing team to understand who is engaging with the marketing content, how often, and then they can use additional technology, the newer stuff to identify why, that's when you start looking at like real MQLs that can really be of value to the sales team.
Joel had mentioned earlier that MQLs had been kind of discounted as maybe not as valuable as they once were. And I'm wondering, where is the ideal cutover? Where does marketing stop and sales begin? Like how many case studies does somebody need to read? How many PDFs are they going to read? Like, do we still count on the potential customer, you know, clicking that button that says, you know, schedule a demo, or clicking the button that says talk to a salesperson? Or are salespeople still actively going after some of the people who are interacting with like marketing content that they're finding online?
It's a gray area. I think you've identified the gray area. I mean, that's it doesn't have to be a line.
The mysterious area.
Yeah, it can be the sales team engaging, you know, finding people that are on the buyer's journey and engaging with them. And that can definitely work. And so that's, you know, so all this stuff we're talking about, you know, there are elements that are linear, but, you know, there is a big, fuzzy, wide gray area between the marketing journey and the sales funnel. And how that stuff gets from one to the other is, you know, that's what makes it a complex and exciting thing to be part of, because, you know, there's more than one way to get, you know, somebody from the outset of the buyer's journey to, you know, a customer.
Carl, so well said. And I to me, like you said, exciting. And it is, you know, in our variety of clients, we find leadership taking different approaches to this. And it's like, this is the point of innovation right now, is that there are different technologies and buyers are changing too. They're much more accustomed to doing a little bit more personal shopping on the web before they talk to a salesperson, et cetera, or that's my belief. And so you're seeing strategists making different decisions and kind of like learning about that gray area, you know, as a good leader does, particularly as things are changing right now.
I think I've come up with a new metaphor that could fit both the marketing and the salespeople. So marketing are sort of like the people who run sort of like a stagecoach line. And they find interesting people along the way. And they're like, oh, would you like to learn about our amazing new data warehouse engine? Please climb aboard the stagecoach and let's go on the way. And then sales are sort of like the bandits that attack the stagecoach and take the...
No, continue, Eric.
Yes, I'm please go on.
Keep going.
Do they murder like, disqualified leads? That person doesn't want to go to the
end. Save the watches of the people. Yeah. Keep going, Eric. Let's interrupt him a little bit more, Carl. No, go ahead, Eric.
I think they probably steal their watches, but in their place, they do leave a new enterprise database solution. Gives them ROI.
Okay. All right. Yes, that's right. Marketing runs a stagecoach line and sales is a bunch of bandits. I have another idea, which is what I think should be the title of this entire thing, which is hugging rock stars on the front lines.
I love that.
Ooh, tell me more. Why?
Because marketing is all about rock stars who hug each other. And Carl said that, you know, that sales is all about, you know, like the ready difficulties of the front lines and stabbing each other in the backs and taking each other out of the kneecaps and stuff.
I don't think it's quite that bad, but you know, we were referring to Glengarry Glen Ross at the outset. So, I mean, that was a pretty cold hearted look at sales, but,
true.
You know, there's a lot of pressure in that business or in that particular profession, I should say. And there's pressure. You know, marketers feel pressure as well. There's no question about that. I mean, I think, you know, most of the clients that we encounter, while I would imagine that the pressure on the sales team is still slightly more elevated, folks feel it in the marketing department too. I mean, there is response. I mean, that's why we have chief revenue officers now, because, you know, we're bringing all those efforts under one umbrella. And, you know, trying to really coordinate it all and improve the output of both marketing and sales. Mm. And again, it goes back to it being an exciting time, because, you know, I think a lot of these traditional ways that we're kind of talking about, they definitely were the norm up until maybe about 2010 or so. But there's definitely, in again, anecdotal observation from our client base, but there are a lot of different ways that sales and marketing the organizational design that goes around how sales and marketing integrates is definitely evolving, and they are definitely, you know, there's a gray area there, just like between the marketing and the sales funnel. There's a gray area between the two departments. They are munging together as one, increasingly, at least from my observation.
So you think that maybe in the future will sales and marketing be one department?
Oh, I hate to predict the future because I'm usually wrong. I predicted the 2016 election famously wrong. So I will.
Yeah, everybody's heard about that, Carl.
Yeah,
you don't
I know.
Have to tell us.
I will. I will say that I definitely think that you are seeing more unified efforts in this area, and whether that become whether the status quo becomes that, I don't know, because there's still a lot of, you know, we work in a specific industry, and that is tech. You know, if you go to you know, more traditional industries, your Caterpillar, your manufacturing, whatever, you know, there's some very traditional methodology still being used in other industries, but some of the more innovative ones, I shouldn't say innovative ones, medical, tech, places like that, you are seeing some change to the standard paradigms or historical paradigms.
I imagine there must be a lot more pressure on marketing now that it's easier to see their successes, too. It's easier to see if things that they're doing are actually being effective. Like we can tell how much time people are spending on a web page. We can tell how many people are downloading a PDF, et cetera. So that must give marketing a sense of pressure that is similar to the sense of pressure that sales felt in a pre-tracking world.
I would also offer real quick, and then Joel, please chime in. I would also offer that marketing professionals are being paid a lot more equitably compared to sales than they were, say, 20 years ago. You know, 20 years ago, you rolled in, you know, the sales guy rolled in an Audi and the marketing person came in their Corolla. That is no longer the case. So people in marketing can get paid a lot of money.
Yeah, they both have Corollas.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably true. Or they've got those little child's toy scooters that you see out. Everybody can rent and go four blocks in. With equitable payment compared to sales comes equitable pressure. So I cede the floor to my young friend, Mr. Barker.
Young Mr. Barker, do you have some thoughts on that?
I enjoy so much listening to you all. Yes, I do. The current average tenure of a marketing director is 18 months. And that is not long enough to be successful, particularly if you're just doing the opposite of the last person who was in that job for 18 months. And to me, one of those things that indicates is that there isn't a best practice to evaluate people on. And often what happens is that leadership and director come up with a metric of some sort, but that metric it's hard to say whether it's causal or correlative, you know, of success.
Oh man. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense because, you know, sales can directly point at a dollar figure and be like, see, we brought in this much money. And marketing can be like, we have this many downloads. You know, it's hard to track that.
Yeah. Well, and nobody in the C-suite wants to, you know, because the first thing, if you're selling something that is enterprise level or complex, the sales team, the first thing they're going to go, our sales cycles are 6 to 9 months, so leave us alone. And then the marketing team's going, well, we need 9 months to ascertain if our SEO program is working. And then you go up to the top floor and they're hearing it's going to be 18 months from now until anything good happens. And they're going, well, shit, Bob, that's not good enough, you know, and then that's when the pressure is applied and things happen.
We should have a sound in our podcast, which is when we earn the explicit tag. And we just
note that I did not swear first. It was Eric, and I felt like I had permission once he did it. And so I went ahead and said shit.
Well, shit.
Hell yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that I swore. Next time I will use only minced oaths and I will say something like, Gadzooks. Gadzooks, Senor Barker.
Golly whiz.
Okay, so I feel like we kind of interrupted you there when you were talking about the pressure on the marketing department. Joel, do you have anything else you want to add to that?
Rounding it out is that I certainly hope that someday we have we return to some idea of a best practice for marketing or a best measurement for it. And I think that we're kind of in the wilderness about that right now. Mm-hmm. And that would mean that we could have like longer term commitments to marketing enterprise or marketing campaigns or marketing strategies, and that people could, you know, kind of be around long enough to see benefit in them. And that, you know, that broadly spoken 18 month tenure. And yet at the same time, we do need to drive revenue faster because nowadays most of these organizations in B2B tech are investment driven. And so the people upstairs who are like, we don't have 18 months, you know, like they're right. We have to. So it's a currently seemingly intractable problem, which is not truly intractable, but we do need to figure it out.
Yeah. I'm just sort of thinking of the chain of causality there where you have, you know, investors driven by a desire for a quick profit, which influences the C-level executives who are like, we need to have an ROI immediately. And then all of a sudden, marketing and sales, who both kind of have to like split the time. You know, marketing has a certain amount of time to attract the big enough fish, and then sales has to have enough time to sweet-talk the fish and convince it to climb into the deep fryer.
Well, I would also offer some hope here in that, you know, we talked earlier about, you asked about, well, will sales and marketing eventually become one big happy unit called snarketing or whatever? But, you know, there are concepts and technologies out there today that maybe are going to lead us out of the wilderness, you know, and RevOps would be one of them.
Yeah.
You know, something that we have some familiarity with. And there are people working to address this specific pain point. And, you know, I don't know how close we are on the horizon in terms of something that's going to be a breakthrough type solution. But, you know, from what I understand about the RevOps concept, that there is hope there with that particular item.
And there's smaller, there's actionable things for teams to do now, I think, that don't involve RevOps, which is going to be a 2-year commitment before it comes into play, I know. But, like, you know, as you all know, I'm a very big fan of account-based marketing, and that is the gray area between sales and marketing. That's like a high-touch marketing effort that's targeted towards, you know, one-to-few or one-to-one audience, and that really invites an interaction between those that kind of could get back to the water cooler stuff that Carl has noted that we're missing now, where the silos are like physical and we're not actually socializing or having any opportunity to understand each other. But when you work on an ABM project, you have to, you know, that's the job.
It blows my mind that we are not doing those for every single client that has a an investment requirement in the 5 to 6 figure range. I'm surprised we don't do more of them.
So let me ask you guys, do you feel like we have fully explored the complicated and still evolving relationship between sales and marketing? Do we we're currently at a spot where there's an open-ended question. Can sales and marketing continue to exist on their own? Are there metaphors purely unmixable in any way that makes sense in a modern digital world? Are we heading towards a place where we need to have a new department, whether it's RevOps or Smarketing, with a brand new, freshly minted metaphor of its own? Or will sales and marketing continue trundling along, clinging to their pre-digital worldviews and hoping for the best?
So all you students at home, that's your homework. Answer all of those questions. Send them to info@lionsway, and we will grade them and send you your diploma in the Sales and Marketing of the New Millennium course.
And I would encourage the audience to stay tuned for our next exciting episode when all three of us get really drunk and try and answer all of the questions Eric just asked.
Ooh, at the same time.
Yes. We will talk over each other. It will be like a Republican primary debate. And I will probably call somebody a piece of trash. So there.
It's usually me.
We hope you enjoyed Enduring the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show, brought to you by Lion's Way. I'd like to thank our producer, Eric Arneson, for making us all sound smarter in post. Please remember to tip your server and subscribe to this podcast on the platform of your choice. And be sure to visit lionswaycontent.com for all of your B2B marketing content needs. Yeah.